Greetings, and welcome to Atlas Financial Holdings 2018 Q2 earnings results. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. A question and answer session will follow the formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to your host, Scott Wolny, Chief Executive Officer of Atlas Financial.
Thank you very much, Jeremy, and good morning, everyone. With me today is Paul Romano, our Vice President and CFO. We're very pleased to report continued favorable underwriting performance in the second quarter, highlighted by a strong combined ratio, greater than 20% return on equity, and book value appreciation. I'll now turn it over to Paul to provide details about our quarterly materials and review our policy regarding forward-looking statements.
Thank you, Scott, and good morning, everyone. Yesterday, after market close, Atlas issued its second quarter 2018 financial results. Copy of this press release are available at the investor relations section at the company's website at www.atlas-fin.com. On this call, Atlas may make forward-looking statements regarding the company, its subsidiaries, and businesses. Such statements are based on the current expectations of the management of each entity. The words anticipate, expect, believe, may, should, estimate, project, outlook, forecast, or similar words are used to identify such forward-looking information. The forward-looking events and circumstances discussed on this call may not occur and could differ materially as a result of known and unknown risk factors and uncertainties affecting the companies, including risks regarding the insurance industry, economic factors, and the equity markets generally, and the risk factors discussed in the Risk Factors section of its Form 10-K for the year ended December 31st, 2017. No forward-looking statement can be guaranteed. Except as required by applicable securities laws, forward-looking statements speak only as of the date on which they are made, and the company and its subsidiaries undertake no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statement, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise. When discussing our business operations, we may use certain terms of art which are not defined under U.S. GAAP. In the event of any unintentional difference between the presentation materials and our GAAP results, investors should rely on the financial information in our public filings. All amounts discussed on this call are in U.S. dollars unless otherwise indicated. We will be utilizing a slideshow presentation in conjunction with this call. Though we may address a few slides specifically, in general, we will use this as an accompaniment. Feel free to follow along as we will follow the basic structure of the document. This presentation is available on our website's investor relations section and then under the earnings release info selection. For those of you following along with our presentation, we'll begin on slide three. With that, I'll turn the call back over to Scott.
Thanks, Paul. We continue to be pleased with our results in 2018. Our earnings per share are on track to achieve the level to which we previously guided, and we're taking advantage of the favorable competitive environment in commercial auto and our niche in particular from a rate perspective. As always, we're focused on margin expansion as opposed to top-line growth and want to emphasize the importance of that dynamic. The significant investment we've made in predictive analytics is helping to optimize the value we're able to deliver as a specialist. Results from our in-vehicle technology initiatives continue to show promise and are beginning to create opportunities to generate meaningful amounts of new business at above-average level of expected profitability. As highlighted on slide three, our results in the quarter include a strong combined ratio based on our measured approach to new business writings, improved net income per share, and an annualized return on equity of 23.8%. We're confident that continued progress in these areas will create significant shareholder value and book value growth going forward. Paul will provide more detail on our financial results in a few minutes. Atlas has a longstanding focus on delivering a strong value proposition as a highly specialized writer of commercial auto insurance products to the evolving niche market of people using light vehicles to move people around. Within the $2.25 billion sub-segment on which we focus, we've continued to see a shift from more traditional taxi business over to livery, limo, and paratransit. We've detailed the changing landscape on past calls, and many of the same trends have continued. In short, Taxi premium is down but stable. Non-emergency paratransit is growing, and livery and limo continue to expand, with the most growth attributed to transportation network company-related activities. Slide four illustrates the way in which our business mix has transitioned along with these trends. We're proud of the fact that our value proposition continues to benefit traditional operators and has also been evolved to enable us to capitalize on the disruption seen in our niche in recent years. We've maintained our focus on owner-operators and small fleets, which we believe has been the most profitable subsegment of commercial auto, but are increasingly seeing opportunities to engage larger accounts through the use of in-vehicle technologies and other insurtech-driven aspects of our business model. To the extent that part-time transportation network and other gig economy drivers increasingly purchase commercial insurance, the size of our market could increase by as much as $500 million to $1 billion. It takes time to cultivate these relationships, but we're enthusiastic about our pipeline. Atlas's competitive advantages remain relevant through the evolution of our existing infrastructure that provides localized and more effective customer care with the benefit of a larger, integrated national platform. As shown on slide five, our business is geographically distributed across the country, with premium generated in 42 states plus the District of Columbia. Our overall market share is approximately 12-13% nationwide. We have long maintained that proportionate share would be 20% of the market, which provides a long runway for potential growth and is achievable given the current hard market for commercial auto. While our year-over-year gross written premium growth in the quarter was relatively flat, we captured market share in key areas like California and New York. We increased retention for accounts predicted to be better than average and reduced our exposure to those predicted to be worse than average from a loss perspective. Paul and I will both share more detail in this regard later in the call. Moving on to slide six, demand as measured by new business applications is trending up. Our competitive environment is currently populated primarily by smaller, local, non-standard companies. Our comparative advantages are driven by niche expertise, customer-centric service and claims handling, and other differentiators that stack up favorably to these more generalist companies. These are the things that our customers prioritize when they decide where to purchase their insurance and how much of a premium they may be willing to pay. Furthermore, there are no apparent signs of new entrants. We have seen our hit ratios decline slightly as increased rate has been introduced during the first half of the year. In the past, when we've taken significant rate, we've also seen competitors follow price leadership and expect that to be the case in the second half of this year as well. In the meantime, we're generating a level of new business consistent with last year, as illustrated by bound policy count shown in red. The levels of price change I referenced are detailed on slide seven. The ISO rate changes shown in blue are a good proxy for an average competitor. You can see that in all cases where ISO recommended rate changes, our increases outpace the competition. In addition to an overall increase in the average rate levels, our use of predictive analytics is helping to shift our overall business written to a larger percentage of accounts expected to generate below average losses, as denoted by the graph on the right side of this page. Our goal is to maximize hit ratios for these favorable accounts and reduce the relative amount of less profitable accounts. Slide 8 shows our in-force business, which remains near record levels, and we expect continued profitable growth going forward. Paul and I will now discuss our financial results, and I will then share details regarding the impact of the pricing dynamic, as well as a more fulsome discussion regarding market conditions and strategic opportunities. With that, let me turn it over to Paul.
Thanks, Scott. As always, I encourage each of you to review our filings, our slide presentation, and to reach out to Scott or myself with any questions. Slide 10 provides some key financial highlights. For the second quarter 2018, gross premium written was $57.4 million for both the three-month periods ended June 30, 2018 and 2017. We continue to push our average rates higher and are focusing on underwriting profit and risk selection, which may pressure top-line growth in the short run. At June 30, 2018, in-force premiums increased to $270.9 million from $268.5 million at December 31, 2017. Net income for the second quarter 2018 was $5.6 million, or 47 cents per earnings per common share diluted, compared to $5.5 million, or $0.45 per diluted common share in the prior year quarter. Annualized return on equity was 23.8% in the second quarter of 2018. At June 30, 2018, our operating leverage, as measured by net written premium to combined statutory surplus, was roughly 2.2 to 1, as indicated in the top chart on slide 11. Managing our operating leverage is important from both regulatory and rating agency perspectives, as we continue to manage to an approximate 2 to 1 relationship between net written premium and statutory surplus. During the second quarter of 2018, our quota share cession rates were 30% and 25% of subject written premium for the ASI Pool Companies and Global Liberty, respectively. Net written premium for the three-month period ended June 30, 2018, was $34.8 million compared to $46.3 million from the prior year period. Through the balance of this year, we will continue to see deleveraging as a result of the increase to the ASI Pool cession rate during Q2 of 2018. Slide 12 breaks out the key components of our combined ratio after accounting for the effects of reinsurance. Atlas's combined ratio was 88.9% in the three-month period ended June 30, 2018, as compared to 86.2% in the prior year period. The loss ratio relating to claims incurred for the three-month period ended June 30, 2018 was 61.1% compared to 60.1% for the three-month period ended June 30, 2017. The loss ratio increased over the prior year period primarily due to the company's continued review of underwriting profitability by product and state and higher than expected claim costs associated with Atlas's participation in non-voluntary assigned risk pools. The underwriting expense ratio for the three-month period ended June 30, 2018 was 27.3% compared to 25.6% for the three-month period ended June 30, 2017. The ratio included $750,000 of non-recurring expenses related to final year-end work and business system changes. Actual payment timing of expenses versus 2017 were also impacted. Slide 13 provides both quarterly and annual combined ratio trend information in terms of its components. As always, we encourage users to look at these ratios on an annualized basis rather than focus on changes from quarter to quarter, as there are a number of factors that can impact the shorter-term view. Slides 14 and 15 provide an overview of our overall balance sheet strength and our cash and invested assets. We have always maintained the view of a conservative investment portfolio is important. Our primary investment objective is to protect capital to support underwriting operations. As seen on slide 15, while the majority of our $226.4 million of cash and invested assets are invested in publicly traded high-quality fixed income securities, we do have approximately $30 million of other than fixed income investments, or OTFI. Half of these OTFI investments are private commercial real estate-backed investments. The remainder are a combination of investments deemed appropriately conservative by our investment committee. All of these investments are audited annually and qualify as admitted assets from an insurance regulatory standpoint. We do not have concerns about the value of any of these investments. However, based on the current book value, we have made a decision to reduce the percentage of OTFI investments during the year. In the second quarter, these investments were reduced by $1.4 million. We are continuing our effort to reduce our allocation in the OTFI investment category. In some cases, withdrawals or sales that were initiated in the first half of this year will not be reflected until the second half of 2018 due to redemption and other timing windows. Book value per common share was $8.06 at June 30, 2018, as compared to $7.42 at December 31, 2017. The elements of the 64-cent change in book value per common share relative to December 31, 2017, are outlined on page 16. Please note that the change in unrealized losses on our fixed income portfolio had a non-cash decrease to book value per share of $0.23 during the first half of 2018. With that, let me turn the call back to Scott for his concluding remarks.
Thanks, Paul. Before I continue discussing opportunities ahead of us, it's important to provide an update regarding reserves. This information is presented in the same format as last quarter's call, with some additional detail based on input received during and after our Investor Day in May, which took place shortly after our last conference call. On slide 18, we highlight key changes from last quarter in connection with the ASI pool companies, which represent the largest portion of our reserves and have been affected most by the implementation of analytics. In particular, you can see that overall inventories have declined, and more challenging areas, like Michigan, continue to represent a lesser amount of our exposure. Since year-end 2017, overall accident year 2017 and prior reserves have decreased by 33.2%, while claim counts have been reduced by 58.8%. Slide 19 identifies our overall gross loss and loss adjustment expense reserves for accident year 2017 and prior, as broken out into categories that have distinct characteristics. These include older, non-modeled claims, claims in inventory which have been modeled, Michigan as a separate category, newer physical damage and other claims that have not yet been modeled, and the remaining reserves available for incurred but not reported losses. We are committed to providing both transparency as well as updates relative to the benchmarked expectations on a quarterly basis. This detail is laid out in the next four slides by reserve category. Predictive model-based case reserves, which are set using the methodology we introduced in early 2016 and expect to represent the bulk of our reserves as older claims are adjudicated, are addressed on slide 20. In total, claims in this category continue to close with redundancy relative to case, returning reserves into IBNR. Aggregate case reserves of $62.7 million were set by the model since inception, and the amount paid on closure, including closures without payment, totaled $55.2 million. Predictive model-based case reserves represent the majority of our pending third-party liability claims for accident year 2017 and prior at this point. Our expectation is that overall, claims in this category will close at or slightly below the case reserves predicted by our models over time. These models are refreshed regularly to refine predictive ability as well as to capture underlying loss trend information. Claims that were too old to be modeled when our current protocol was introduced carry a factor reserve. Activity related to these claims is provided on slide 21. As part of our year-end 2017 work, experienced members of our claims team conducted a detailed review of these well-developed claim files and created a database to benchmark expectations regarding ultimate loss costs earlier this year. At that time, there were approximately 1,300 claims in this category. Year to date in 2018, 420 older claims which were not scored by the predictive model were closed with an aggregate paid amount of $12.7 million compared to an expected benchmark range of $7.8 to $18.3 million. Given the age of the remaining claims where we have taken a case-by-case review, they are expected to have a higher tendency for severity than our average calendar year paid severity across our book of business. The remaining count of non-scored claims is 638, with an average allocated case in IBNR per feature of approximately $35,500 apiece. The gray bucket represents a combination of case reserve and an allocation of IBNR equal to the expected ultimate loss costs related to these claims. We are pleased to see that thus far in 2018, claims in this group are being paid well within our estimated range, and we will continue to monitor and share with investors as we provide as we make progress through the remainder of 2018. Slide 22 outlines activities related to non-modeled Michigan claims. This has been a challenging state for Atlas as well as other commercial auto insurers in recent years. Our overall exposure to Michigan was significantly reduced since it was identified as trending in the wrong direction and now represents less than 1% of our business and is shrinking. Open claim inventories have been reduced to 351, of which 68.7% have been scored. All of the remaining older 160 claims were file reviewed, and as of June 30th, 2018, we expect a total loss cost related to these claims to be $10.1 million and are allocated an average of $63,000 per claim in case an IBNR for the runoff of the open non-modeled inventory, which represents a higher payout over historical averages in the state. The remaining Michigan claims that have case reserves set by our predictive model are included in the light blue section. On slide 23, the remaining IBNR for accident year 2017 and prior, claims that have not yet been reported to us or are less than a month old so have not yet been scored, is shown at $42.4 million. Based on historic frequency trends, we should pay approximately 750 of new claims for accident year 2017 and prior going forward. We will continue to update this information quarterly to provide clarity regarding progress. While there is a significant focus on reserves, we also think it's important to share information about actual claim closure and severity trends. Slide 24 confirms that we continue to close claims faster than in the past and for lower calendar year paid severity amounts. Ultimately, the goal of introducing analytics in our claims process was to accomplish this, and we're pleased to see data supporting this expectation. As claim activity appears to be moving in the right direction, market data from the Council of Insurance Agents and Brokers, which is graphed on slide 25, demonstrates that commercial auto rates continue to be increased in general. Pricing levels are higher than they have been seen in more than a decade at this point and appear to continue to strengthen. This is expected to create buoyancy in our niche. As shown on slide 26, our insured vehicles in force have been relatively flat year over year. We're comfortable allowing hit ratios and persistency to fall in the near term in exchange for greater underwriting margin in the longer term. For those of you who've been following the Atlas story for some time, we have seen opportunities to push rate when the variables in our niche markets support doing so. We had similar instances in both 2014 and 2016. Our expectation is that this approach will create the most shareholder value in a favorable market environment. We also expect these to return to levels similar to prior years as our competitors once again follow Atlas's price leadership. Slide 27 shows that our risk selection appears to be working, with claims presented continuing to be marginally lower than growth in insured vehicles. On slide 28, we provide additional detail with respect to price elasticity and the relative shift in expected profitability of our book. The graph on the left side illustrates the relationship between persistency and rate changes. This relatively linear relationship suggests that we are on the front end of the supply-demand curve and truly leading our niche market. In the upper left, you can see that where rate increases were limited to less than 20%, our persistency was between 80 and 100%. In the lower right, those accounts receiving the biggest increases, and these are generally more challenged from a loss ratio standpoint, were much less likely to renew with us. As competitors raise rates, we would expect a more concave slope. We'll be tracking this information carefully and take a thoughtful view on price change with the objective of optimizing return on capital, especially in an environment where significant premium growth could necessitate greater use of reinsurance. In the chart on the right half of the page, we show the relative persistency for renewal of below average, average, and above average accounts as scored by our underwriting predictive models. The first row, labeled 1 to 400, are the bottom third, while the third row, labeled 701 to 999, are the top third. As you can see, in the past year, we retained 67% of the bottom third, 87% of the middle, and 91% of the best categories, respectively. As a result, a disproportionately large amount of our business is in the category predicted to be the most profitable, which should have a favorable impact on combined ratio in the future. In terms of expectation, we always put a priority on margin over top-line growth. As I mentioned previously, we expect local competitors to follow the price leadership Atlas exhibited in the first half of the year, and we do not expect the change to our AM Best rating to have a material impact on the quality or quantity of business we write. We have already begun the process of expanding our fronting relationship in states where there may be more risk of rating sensitivity, but other than normal seasonality, we have not seen any significant slowdown of application activity in recent weeks. We continue to identify significant opportunities in the transportation network company-related space as well. Last year, we highlighted some of our successes in this area, and I look forward to confirming future successes as opportunity in our pipeline are realized. From an operating margin perspective, we will continue to focus on increasing rate versus exposure while maintaining operating efficiency. We will leverage the value of our core assets through partnerships with reinsurers, analytics and technology companies, and other strategic resources. Innovation is a critical aspect of our strategy, and we will continue to expand the utilization of in-vehicle technologies and our ongoing commitment to analytics across the enterprise. We are beta testing our digital usage-based product designed for part-time transportation network drivers and are excited about the next generation aspect of our business, which builds on the foundation we have in our traditional niche. Provided this pilot validates the digital platform, we expect to begin distributing the insurance product itself later this year. Once that's underway, we'll begin to share more details. We continue to expect to generate full-year net income per share in excess of $2, which equates to a greater than 20% return on equity. Provided loss activities continue to behave as we've been observing, the full-year loss ratio should trend in a positive direction as well. As always, we will continue to manage our business in an operationally efficient manner and as a result, maintain an expense ratio in the range we've seen in the past. Now, let's open it up for questions.
At this time, we'll be conducting a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment, please, while we poll for questions. Our first question comes from the line of Bob Farnham from Boeing and Scattergood. Please proceed with your question.
Hey there, and good morning.
Hey, Bob.
I had a question. The interpretation on slide 20, I just want to make sure I heard you right. So the actual paid amounts have come down. Well, the actual paid amounts have been $55 million, and the reserve you had for that was $62 million. So that extra $7.5 million was redundant, and that you didn't recognize, but you're putting that into IBNR. Is that was that how you dealt with that?
That's correct.
Okay. Just to remind us of the flexibility of the Swiss Re quota share. I mean, how much can you cede and how often can you make changes to that?
So the maximum we can cede is 50% and the minimum is 5%. And we are able to elect to change that on a quarterly basis. As part of that agreement, there is a structure designed to maintain an annual relationship between net written premium and surplus at 2-to-1 or better. As Paul pointed out, we're slightly above that right now, but the 30% cession for the ASI pool and the 25% cession for Global Liberty based on forecasts for the year will bring us below the 2-to-1. So at this point, we are not changing the cession rates for the third quarter, but we do have the option if we wanted to increase it in future quarters.
It'll bring you down below the 2-to-1 by year end or within what time frame?
By year end.
Okay. All right. That's it for me. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks for the questions, Bob.
Mm-hmm.
As a reminder, if you would like to enter the question and answer queue, please press star 1 on your keypad. Our next question comes from the line of Bill Desilem from Titan Capital Management. Please proceed with your question.
Thank you. A couple of questions. The first one relative to your part-time TNC offering that you're beta testing now. What can you tell us about that beta, and did we hear correctly that you are planning on rolling that out in full force later this year?
Well, so the test currently is focusing on the technology platform itself. You know, it is a mobile phone-based distribution where the app, which is an Android as well as an iOS app, is effectively serving not only as the distribution platform but also the underwriting tool. And so first we are testing that technology itself before insurance coverage is provided. So we have a beta group that was assembled, and we're confident that within a relatively short period of time, we'll be able to identify any challenges with the technology, resolve them. Once we've done that, we then plan to introduce the insurance aspect. So rather than acting as a beta group, initial users will actually be purchasing the insurance over the platform. So our intention is to launch that in Illinois only. And as we've commented on earlier calls, you know, our goal is to limit the premium to a range of probably $3 to $20 million in the first year. And while that seems like a pretty wide range, obviously it's a new product. We're going to be the first to market with that. We are very comfortable the $3 million is sufficient to validate all the underwriting algorithms. And we want to limit the premium levels to below $20 million. With the idea that we don't want to create too much exposure on a brand new product until we have an opportunity to validate that all the assumptions that went into underwriting and loss ratio expectations will bear out. Once we have that confidence, which will be in 2019, probably towards the end of the year, that's when we would anticipate beginning to roll it out in other states. So I wouldn't describe what we're going to do at the end of this year as a full-fledged launch. It will be a full launch of the product, but only in one state and with some pretty specific parameters around what we expect to do. And then, again, once we validated all the assumptions that were made in terms of the underwriting components and the algorithms behind it, that's when we'd expect to start rolling it out incrementally in other states.
Thank you, Scott. And are you finding that there is anything happening to increase driver awareness of the need for insurance? And I posed the question in the spirit of the last time that I was in an Uber. The driver said his personal insurance was exactly what he needed.
I think there is more awareness. I still think there is a lack of awareness in general. However, we have partnered with a number of different resources that focus on the part-time transportation network drivers in terms of providing them with information to help them be successful. And one of the things that we're finding that they are increasingly emphasizing is the insurance aspect and the risk that is created for the drivers if they don't buy primary commercial auto insurance. The other thing that we're seeing is an increased perspective among at least some of the transportation network companies to encourage drivers to find primary insurance. And so while now I wouldn't describe that as a push at this point, I do think that there is a bit of a nudge going on in terms of how information is shared. So our goal is to first make sure that we have a product that satisfies that need in a way that's appropriate for the drivers, is commercially viable, and will be profitable for us. And at that point, we will then want to try to work with some of these different partners to try to market and promote that product. So I think the awareness is increasing, but like I said, it's certainly not across the board. But we do think that's going to continue to trend in the right direction over time.
Thank you. And then on a completely different note, you had referenced a number of actions that you think will benefit the combined ratio. How long do you believe it'll be before that's apparent to us with the financial statements?
Well, from a loss ratio perspective, as we've said earlier this year, especially given the strengthening at the end of last year, we want to be conservative about our current accident year loss ratio, and we are going to want to see, the prior year loss ratios validated at the end of this year before we really take any significant credit. We are carrying a loss ratio this year that's above what it was last year, even after reserve strengthening, although we have been putting a significant amount of rate in the market in excess of what we believe loss trend is. So all of those things point to a better loss ratio for accident year 2018, but I don't think we would choose to recognize that until some point in 2019. And again, only after, going through a fulsome, actuarial review at year end, which has always been our practice and is common, as you know, in the industry. So I think that's, a longer term expectation. In terms of expense ratio, there were some higher than average and non-recurring expenses in the quarter that Paul had commented on. So we do expect that on a full year basis to run about 27%. So better than we recognized in the quarter, but more consistent with, you know, kind of our trailing 12-month expense ratio, you know, over the past couple of years. So that should be recognized earlier. And overall, you know, we're comfortable with the EPS forecast that we made based on those two expectations.
Thank you.
Thanks for the questions, Bill.
Thanks, Bill.
Our next question comes from the line of Frederick Shepard from Capital Returns Management. Please proceed with your question.
Good morning, guys. Just on the investment side, you mentioned that you had started and I think plan to continue reducing your exposure to the OTFI investments over the course of 2018. Can you maybe provide us with some order of magnitude, whether it be dollars or percentage, that you hope to reduce the investment by over the course of the year?
So the steps we've already taken should reduce that exposure by about 30% from where it was at year-end 2017. We may reduce it further, depending on the timing of liquidation of some of the real estate investments that make up half of that OTFI investment. You know, although those are cash flowing positively, and as Paul mentioned, we're very comfortable with the value we're carrying them at, they are relatively illiquid in the short run. All of those were investments expected to have a 3 to 5 year sort of time horizon, and so it will take some time for those to be liquidated, and we have definitely made the decision we do not intend to liquidate OTFI assets at a loss, simply to reduce exposure to them if we're otherwise comfortable with the investment, you know, especially those real estate investments that are cash flowing positively and appear to be appreciating as expected. So, you know, we'll provide an update every quarter on that, but I think by year end, you know, the 30% magnitude should certainly be achievable, and it could be more depending on the timing of some of the real estate sales.
Great. And then I guess my second question, just on the assigned risk business, I think it had a 1.4 percentage point impact on the loss ratio in the quarter, which you mentioned is elevated but is in line with last quarter. I was just wondering how we should think about this going forward, and are there any states in specific that might be causing more of an impact than others?
Yeah, you know, it's very hard to peg an estimate on that, Fred. I would put an expectation kind of on a run rate perspective. I think if you utilize what we've done already this year and just kind of forecast that out for the balance of the year, I think you'd be safe.
Yeah, I mean, part of what's driving that, of course, is the fact that commercial auto in general has seen a lot of development, and so you're seeing two things: as rate increase, more risks are going into these assigned risk pools. And of course, you know, all commercial auto writers are required to take a proportionate amount of that exposure. I think the good news is some of the more challenging states that we've highlighted, like Michigan, are also challenged in terms of the assigned risk result. And as we write less business in those states, the assignments we receive will also be less. So, you know, that should trend it in a better direction. But as Paul said, it's hard to, you know, it's hard to forecast because, you know, you effectively get a bill at the end of the quarter from the various assigned risk pools. So there's not much that anybody can do to manage exposure there other than reducing primary exposure in those more challenged states, which should then ultimately reduce the level of assignments that you receive as well.
Great. Thanks.
Thanks for the question.
Thanks, Fred.
As a reminder, if anybody would like to enter the queue, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Our next question comes from the line of Matthew Carletti from JMP Securities. Please proceed with your question.
Yeah, thanks. Good morning.
Good morning, Matt. Good morning.
Just going back to that page 20, question is, you know, I believe that's closed claim counts that we're looking at there. And so my question is on kind of the open inventory. You know, by those three categories that you show, kind of the varying, you know, sizes, how would that population look? Is it more heavily in the between 25 and 50 and above 50 buckets because the less than 25s tend to close out first much more quickly? They tend to be easier, or how does that mix look on kind of what remains in inventory?
So, you know, keeping in mind that we are only 6 months out from the end of 2017. There is still a reasonably good mix, given that most of our claims get reported after, you know, within 12 months following an accident year. So it has been the case that we've closed more claims under the $25,000 amount, as you see there. But in general, we'll get a lot more of those claims as well. We will see about 75% of our claims close for an average paid severity of, you know, somewhere between $1,000 and $1,500. So there's a big percentage of small claims that are going to get paid, and then obviously a smaller percentage of bigger claims, which was really at the heart of why we focused on using analytics to try to identify those, you know, claims in the range of $10,000 to $50,000 in the first place. You know, it's a relatively small percentage of our overall claims, but, you know, claims in that range will be about half the dollars. So from a distribution standpoint, I think we'll see a slight increase in the percentage of claims that are predicted to be more severe as a run rate, because the inventory, you know, as the inventory grows, we will be settling out the smaller claims generally earlier and be carrying an inventory older claims that will tend to have a higher predicted severity and probably a higher actual severity. And so that is also part of why we expect that as we go forward, what we pay is going to be closer to the overall predicted severity, where early on, you know, there was a lot of redundancy in those predictive model-based case reserves. But the process is designed to predict ultimate. It's not designed to have embedded redundancy. So while there has been embedded redundancy in the first couple of years in those case reserves, we do expect that to migrate to effectively sufficient. And so that's the expectation. Part of that is the balance of newer claims versus older claims and the related severity, as you highlight. And part of it is, as we continue to refresh and refine the model, it's going to get tighter and tighter. And so that's that will be by design. So that's the thing that we're monitoring and making sure that we're comfortable with.
Okay.
Did that get to the heart of your question?
Yeah, that was helpful.
Yeah, that was helpful.
And then my other question, just kind of looking at, you know, accident year loss ratios this year, can you help us through, if keeping in mind that kind of north of $2 or $2 or better guidance, it seems like accident year loss ratio is the biggest lever, and that to get there, you know, there's probably going to have to be some improvement on that metric beyond kind of just maybe some volatility with the assigned risk and things like that. And so can you walk us through kind of how you're thinking about that? I mean, you've been getting really good pricing. Is that really what you expect to start showing through and bringing the ratios down, or am I thinking about that the wrong way?
Well, certainly pricing is a big part of it. And obviously we started increasing rate in the first half of the year. The relative risk selection that we highlighted, you know, that we're seeing in our renewal book should also have a favorable impact. So the fact that we have shifted proportionately, as I highlighted earlier in the call, where, you know, we renewed 91% of accounts predicted to be better than average loss ratios, and we did not renew almost 40% of accounts predicted to be worse. Should also provide a positive shift in that respect. So that should help. And again, you know, we have taken a position that, you know, we elected a carried loss ratio that was slightly higher than what our outside actuaries believe last year's fully developed loss ratio will be. And so when we feel like the actual loss information reinforces that, especially at the end of the year, we are going to be more likely to want to take credit for that, where right now we want to maintain as conservative an approach as we think is appropriate. And the other thing I would suggest is, you know, we are seeing what looks like a 10 to 25% reduction in paid severity for those claims in the $10,000 to $50,000 range. which we believe is the actual outcome of using the predictive analytics to route those claims and triage them earlier and affect better outcomes. You know, settle the meritorious claims, ideally for less early on, and then defend more vigorously, more effectively the claims that should be, because there's either a lack of causality or the claim amount is inflated. And so if we continue to see that track through, you know, that is also going to be a benefit because, you know, right now, you know, we're not effectively taking credit for that improvement in severity in our carried results. So there's a couple of different moving parts, but fortunately the data that we're observing, you know, and that we shared on the call today, you know, all support the fact that those things seem to be moving in the right direction.
Okay, great. Thanks very much.
The other comment I would just make is, you know, even with a relatively flat gross written premium in the second quarter, you know, we do expect earned premium to continue to grow based on the fact that, you know, we have a significant unearned premium reserve, and we do anticipate that we'll see some growth in the second half of the year as well. So, you know, obviously that earned premium growth at the same combined ratio is also going to increase EPS.
Right. Great. Thank you for the answers.
All right. Thanks for the questions.
Thanks, Matt.
Our next question comes from the line of Paul Newsome from Sandler O'Neill. Please proceed with your question.
The only question I have left is about the fronting agreements and both the possibility of them being used more widely as well as what the incremental costs might be if they are used more widely.
Sure. So there's a handful of states where we've been actively using that, in particular states where there are airports, for example, that had an A-minus rating requirement, like some of the smaller airports in California. And so, you know, we identified three additional states where we think there could be some potential to capture more profitable business if we're writing it on A-minus paper or A paper as opposed to our current ratings. You know, we want to be able to do that. And in terms of cost, you know, there is obviously a fronting fee that will be incorporated into the pricing that we introduce. So we would not expect it to reduce operating margin. It would cause the product to be higher priced, where an A rating is going to be important or necessary for the insureds. But that is the way we would structure the price. If we're not able to absorb the fronting fee, we would not write the business. And in the current market environment, we are comfortable we would be able to do that because the market, you know, again, has been very hard and there are very few, if any, options to obtain primary coverage for our niche customer with a paper right now.
If you found the ratings more important, broadly speaking, how flexible is the use of that fronting fee beyond just these initial three that you've identified? Is it pretty easy to ramp up a fronting agreement, in your opinion?
Well, I think the fact that we have an existing agreement with a partner, you know, who are comfortable and committed to working with us, I think will make it very easy for us as we go forward. You know, that arrangement took a number of months to establish, and then it took almost a year to ultimately implement in terms of rate filings and systems changes and everything else. So I think given that it is an existing strategic arrangement that we have a good amount of flexibility in terms of speed to market if we did feel that that was important or valuable, or if we could expand that in a way that would be margin expanding for us. I think if we were starting from scratch, it would be, you know, it would be much more challenging from a timing perspective at least.
Great. Thanks much. Appreciate it.
Great. Thanks for the questions, Paul.
Thanks, Paul.
Our next question comes from the line of Bill DeZellem from Titan Capital Management.
Thank you. I just wanted to do a quick follow-up relative to your in-vehicle technology that you're implementing. Would you give us a more detailed update than you did in your opening remarks, please?
Sure, I'd be happy to, Bill. I mean, we've highlighted a couple of different partnerships that we have with in-vehicle technology companies. you know, they've played incremental or roles in terms of our securing, you know, especially some of the larger accounts that are our transportation network company related last year. And so, you know, we focused on some of those programs, you know, as sort of a pilot in 2017 to make sure we really understood the expected impact on loss cost. What we're finding is that we've been able to achieve as much as a 35% reduction in loss cost through the active use of in-vehicle technologies, especially those that help us identify distraction before there are accidents, where we can then work with those accounts to actively manage and train the drivers. And so with that information, we've been able to begin marketing to our agents a program where we can allow credits for the use of those technologies for accounts that have the right risk profile and have a commitment to receive and use the information that helps us to manage distraction. So obviously we are limiting the amount of credit we give to the minimum benefit we think the account could get. And then if a greater benefit or a more expected benefit is realized, obviously both we and the account would benefit for future renewals. And so, you know, we have been much more actively promoting that this year, you know, where last year we had a fairly limited sort of pilot by design. And so the result has been very favorable, you know, especially in this hard market environment. Insureds are much more open than they would be in a softer market to making a commitment to manage their driver pools or to utilize in-vehicle technologies, even invest in those technologies with the expectation that it will enable them to, you know, achieve insurance at a price that they think is more reasonable. And so it is a scenario where everyone can win. You know, we can achieve a better loss ratio, they can pay less premium. And, you know, now that we've really been able to validate certain technologies as being key and effective, you know, we're really wanting to promote that. So today, approximately 20% of our overall insured customers have some in-vehicle technology that we believe is effective. And where we are comfortable, we can either help them prevent losses or ultimately pay less when there are crashes because of the data and potentially video that we get from that equipment. Our goal is obviously to increase that percentage, and we think that the marketing strategy we launched earlier this year is ultimately going to help us to do that. And as I highlighted in my comments, you know, where we think we might have the most opportunity to leverage those partnerships are larger fleets or leasing companies, especially those that are growing significantly or have grown as a result of transportation network company expansion across the U.S.
You had mentioned that approximately 20% of your fleet today has some of this technology. What was that number at the end of 2017? And given the trend line that you're experiencing, where would you anticipate it to be at the end of 18?
So end of 2017, I would estimate that number to be, because I don't have this exact number in front of me, probably around 15%. So it has grown in the first half of the year. Again, I think a lot because of the active promotion that we've undertaken. I don't have a good forecast for where that'll be at the end of this year. But again, it is moving in the right direction. And it's something that we think is going to have a dramatic impact in terms of being able to mitigate losses going forward, especially preventing losses as a result of distracted driving, which obviously, you know, was a key element we focused on at our recent Investor Day. And I think really we're able to demonstrate the impact that these technologies can have.
Given that you are now promoting the in-vehicle technology this year, whereas you weren't last year, would it be a fair characterization that it is gaining momentum now with your insureds? And as a result, if you were to have gained the 5 percentage points going from 15 to 20, that it would be more than that in the second half of the year? Or should we be thinking about it in some other way?
Well, I think it's certainly gaining momentum in terms of interest. But it is important to keep in mind it takes some time for the technology to be rolled out in a particular fleet just because of the physical nature of it. And of course, you know, an interested account is also generally going to wait till renewal to make a commitment because, you know, although we are giving credit for the use of the technology, we are also expecting them to make a financial commitment to invest in the technology as well, because we found that that is where you get the most benefit. So there's definitely more interest in terms of, you know, whether you will see that pick up at the same level or more by the end of this calendar year. It's harder for me to say because of those two components, but we are absolutely getting a positive response from our agency base and also from especially larger potential customers. So I do think we will see increased adoption in the near future. I'm just hesitant to commit to a number for the end of this year because, you know, there are a number of underlying variables that are really not something we can control. But the interest is there. I think the way we've been able to use the technology to differentiate relative to competitors is compelling. And we are definitely seeing momentum in terms of activity. So it will translate into increased penetration of the technology, certainly over the next, call it 18 to 24 months.
Thank you, Scott.
Great. Thanks for the questions, Bill.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have reached the end of the question and answer session, and I would like to turn the call back to management for closing remarks.
Great. Thank you very much, Jeremy, and thanks everyone for joining our call today. We look forward to talking with you again in the future.
This concludes today's conference. You may disconnect your lines at this time. Thank you for your participation.